Welcome to McGuire on the Wire, where you'll discover top stories and strategies in specialty tax broken down by our experts. You'll also meet leaders from across the firm who will discuss McGuire Sponsel's approach to common challenges faced by our clients.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. My name is David McGuire, shareholder here at McGuire Sponsel. Today, I want to talk a little bit about the short-term rental market, specifically looking at investors that are renting on Airbnb, VRBO, and other platforms such as that. It's hard to go through a day right now without hearing of someone that is renting out a property, whether it be a vacation home that they've bought that they're renting out on VRBO, someone that is renting out their own personal residence for a short-term rental, or maybe it's just someone that's curious about it after renting a beach house for a week to take a vacation with their family. And there's a lot of implications with these short-term rentals. And there's a lot of tax things that go on to it, because what it amounts to is someone starting a small business to rent this asset out. Now, we have to think about the tax implications associated with this. Do I get to deduct my expenses related to it? Do I get to take some interest deductions? Do I get to take depreciation, et cetera? And there's a lot more that goes into this than just simply looking at it and saying, I'm going to go out and buy a property. So let's take the easiest situation right now. Let's say I rent out my own personal residence. I rent out my home for a couple days a year. IRS actually has an exception on the income related to that. And it states that if I'm renting out my personal residence for 14 days or less per year, I don't actually have to claim that as income. Now, I don't get to claim any expenses with it either, but I don't have to take that income. So let's say I take my personal residence and there's a big event coming up in town and I'm going to be out of town that week and I decide to rent that asset out for 10 days in the next year. And I get a rental rate of $300 per night for renting out my personal residence. That means I get a check for $3,000 for renting it out. The IRS says I don't have to claim that $3,000 as income. Now, conversely, I don't get to take any deductions related to that as well, but that's important for people to know that are just maybe putting their home on the market for a couple days. And that limitation, like I said, is 14 days that they'd be able to do that. Now, that's not the norm for people that are renting out properties on VRBO or Airbnb, etc. So for most people that are renting things out, they're buying a second property and they're putting it on one of these platforms to rent it out. So the first question that comes up is, how much do I actually get to use it myself? And it really depends on what I want to claim for tax purposes. So for most people, if they're looking to deduct all of their expenses, et cetera, from the property, you have a limitation on how much you can use the property. And the IRS sets that limitation as 14 days per year or 10%, whichever is greater. So what that means is if I rent my property out 100 days a year, I can then only personally use that for up to 14 days without triggering some limitations on the income I can, or the expenses I can deduct. Now, if I rent my property out for 300 days a year, I can use the 10%, and then I would get up to 30 days I would be able to utilize. And so depending on the usage of the property, that might affect how much I can use it. That's why actually we often see investors going down and doing maintenance on the property, because the maintenance would not be considered a personal use. But people have to be aware that there are things that are considered a personal use that people don't think about. That might include donating some of my personal days to a charity auction or something else. That could affect that personal use of the property. And so we need to consider that when we're looking at these properties. So that's the first thing, is I have to consider how much I can use the property. The next thing I need to consider is whether or not I can actually access some of the losses that I might generate. If I'm generating income, that's one thing. But from tax purposes, Sometimes people invest in real estate because they're looking to generate some type of loss from the property. And it's important for people to note that in many circumstances, or in most circumstances, these rental properties are considered passive. And they have to take into consideration the passive loss rules, which may mean that they can't utilize all of it. It's important for people to note that passive losses can't offset active income. Now, there are some exceptions to this. Specifically, if you are doing some things that might be considered management of the property, you would be able to use up to about $25,000 to offset non-passive income. Now, that does start phasing out once you hit certain income thresholds, but it does allow for people to get some of those losses out. So it is very important for people to know, are they passive in the entity? Now, some people don't need to worry about this, specifically real estate professionals. If you're a real estate professional, then you don't need to worry about these passive limitations, but that's very specific and very few people actually meet that criteria. So now we know, okay, first off, how much can I use my property? Second off, can I actually deduct any losses I might generate? Now, obviously, if I'm creating income, I don't need to worry about it, because when we're talking about passive versus active, we lump all our passive income, we take our deductions associated with that. If that leads to a net loss, that's a passive loss. If it leads to net gain, that's passive income. Passive losses just can't offset active income. So what I can't do is I can't go out and invest in $2 million worth of real estate to generate some losses that I'm going to use against my income I'm generating from my day job. Now, another key factor that we need to consider is, how much do I get to deduct? And what I mean by that is, okay, am I creating income or am I creating a loss? Well, one of the key things there is looking at the depreciable basis of the property and taking a depreciation deduction, because that's how I create some of these deductions on my rental property. So let's say I go out and I buy a $500,000 rental property. Well, the first thing I need to consider is, what's my depreciable basis in the property? Because most people think I bought a $500,000 property, I get to depreciate $500,000. And that's not true. First thing I need to do is I need to separate out the land value, because the IRS says the land value is not depreciable. So let's say I separate out the land value. Let's just say that, for argument's sake, the land value is 20% or $100,000. In that situation, that $500,000 building, I'd be able to depreciate $400,000 worth of that. Now, once I've determined the depreciable basis, then I can go through and calculate the depreciation. Now, some people might be listening to this thinking, but wait, Dave, I don't need to worry about that because I own a condominium. I don't own the land. The land's owned by the condominium complex. In most cases, that actually would not be a correct statement. In most cases, when you own a condominium, you still own a portion of the land. You still own a portion of the common areas. And the IRS does address this in some of their publications, including Publication 527, Residential Rental Property, where they talk about it. And they say, if you own a condominium, you own a percentage of all the different assets within that condominium, including land, the lobby, elevators, etc. And you can't just think about your little box within the condominium. Okay, so we've taken our $500,000 rental property. We've separated out land of $100,000. Now, how do I depreciate the other $400,000? That really comes down to a question of, is this considered a residential property or non-residential? Now, most people think, well, it's a house. It looks like a house. It smells like a house. It's a house. Unfortunately, that's not the only way we have to look at it. The IRS defines residential rental property as a property that's leased out 80% or more to non-transient housing. And they define transient housing, it's actually not well defined in the code, but typically the IRS looks at transient housing or non-transient housing as housing that's leased out on average 30 days or less would be transient housing. So 30 days or more would be non-transient. So what this means is, if I'm on average leasing out my short-term rental to people that are renting it for a week or two at a time, that would be considered a transient operation, no different than a hotel or something else, which means my property is probably not a 27.5-year asset, but a 39-year asset, and I would recoup my $400,000. My example originally was I bought a $500,000 property, I had $100,000 worth of land, so now I have a $400,000 asset. I would depreciate that over 39 years. And every year I would get 1/39th of my $400,000, just over $10,000 in depreciation, that would offset my income on the property. Now, I could then look at doing cost segregation studies, other things to help minimize that more. But the first step is to determine the basis of the property, then how do I actually depreciate it? And in most cases, these short-term rentals are not a 27.5-year property. They are considered a 39-year asset. Now, once I do that, I can look at cost segregation or other things to maybe accelerate some things out of that 39-year asset and into 5, 7, or 15-year lived assets and maybe accelerate my depreciation a little bit more. But that's really going to depend on how much assets I have in this property. The other thing we need to consider is things like furnishings. Furnishings I can write off over 5 or 7 years. I might be doing some repairs to the property, etc. So there's a lot of things I can consider once I determine those lives and actually look at how I'm going to depreciate the property over time. The reason we bring this up in this podcast, and the reason it's important to a lot of people right now, is that this market has been growing exponentially over the last few years. If you look at the numbers, during October of 2021, the Airbnb rental market was up about 40% over October of 2019. So if you take the October of 2021 after COVID and compare it to October of 2019, right before COVID, it's seen a 40% increase. And so more and more, whenever we see an increase like that, more and more investors are going to get into the market. And it's critical that they understand these ins and outs to make sure they're in compliance with the IRS regulations, but also making sure that they're maximizing their deductions as they move forward. If you have any questions about this or any other area related to depreciation or real estate, please feel free to reference our website or reach out to your McGuire Sponsel representative. Thank you for joining us today.
This has been McGuire on the Wire. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on social @McGuire Sponsel to get more industry news and firm updates.